This show is brought to you by Hello Tushy. Bidets are back. The Church of What's Happening Now is proud to introduce you to Hello Tushy. HelloTushy.com makes portable devices that spray your butt clean with water. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It's like a power washer. It's the most amazing thing I've had in my bathroom. I would give up my shower before I gave up my Hello Tushy.
I could wash your feet, your dick hole. And you're back in action. You get a little water running through your face, and there you are, like a fucking savage. You know what I'm saying? So forget about living in a hotel no more. We're down to HelloTushy.com. Washes your muffler, your scrotum, your helmet, the back of your thighs, just in case you got some monkey grease back there, or you left some Vaseline from 2 weeks ago. And that's it. Go to HelloTushy.com. What do they get, Lee?
If you go to HelloTushy.com and enter promo code CHURCH, you're going to get 10% off of your order. Honestly, get it for your friends. Get it for your family.
It's the fucking holidays.
Every bathroom shit. Everybody in your house.
Nobody has a fucking bidet, but everybody needs one. It's like a tie. It's like handcuffs. You know what I'm saying? Nobody needs them. Nobody goes into a store, but they fucking come in handy. Go to Tushy.com. What do they get, Lee?
HelloTushy.com.
HelloTushy.com. What do they get?
HelloTushy.com/church, you get 10% off.
Bam!
Wow.
On it. Talk to me.
If you go to onit.com and use code word church, you're going to get 10% off of your order of all of their amazing optimization
Tremendous.
Products.
Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Sport, Shroom Tech Immune. I can't tell you all the great things. You're getting a little older. You're feeling under the weather. You can't remember where you put your fucking car keys. Alpha Brain is for you, and they got 100% money back guarantee. Go to onit.com right now on the way out.
Enter promo code CHURCH to get 10% off.
Boom. Kick this fucking horse, Lee.
And then just go to CISO.com.
It was de-escalating right there. We were at a peak and then it dipped a little.
It was a kiss of death.
Oh, shit.
It's that type of day here at the church, cocksuckers. Little nucleus. I heard it on Studio 54 radio on the way here. You gonna kick it up, Lee, or I wanna be a depot in my life. Let's do this shit.
Wow.
Yeah. It's gonna be that type of show, ladies and gentlemen. It's a good one today. We ain't fucking around. Oh shit. Oh shit. Mix it, spank that ass. Oh shit, here it is. Here it comes. It's gonna rub up against your little muffler right now.
Delta 88.
Yeah, this is it. This is summer of fucking 84.
Yeah, breakdancing with the pledge, break busting the cardboard out, breaking down boxes so you can dance on the corner and battle people. B-boys.
The weird thing is I like the beat from this jam. But the thing I like is the guy's rap. Kick it, Lee. Kick it, kick it, kick it, Lee. All the way. Blow up the fucking speakers, Lee. Blow it. There you go. It's a church of what's happening now, cocksuckers. Don't touch that control, Lee. Talk over this fucking sound. What? Come on. Let's go to work. We got what will make your body jerk. Nigga, throw your hands up in the air. Shake your booty and scream, oh yeah. Oh shit. Here we go. Here we go. Take that coin, Luke Hotstar. Here we go. Here we go. Oh shit. Oh shit.
It's the bridge.
Oh shit. Now you're going into the darkness of the jam. Here we go. That fucking. Oh my god.
Synthesizer just kicked in.
This does not end. I could close my eyes and take myself back to a dance floor. And you're losing it. You got a Gorilla Biscuit in you.
You're pop
locking.
You got a
couple lines of coke and shit. Not even. You're just dancing with some hot chick and shit. She's hipping up on you.
What are you wearing?
You're rubbing your helmet on their fucking the side of their hip and shit. But most importantly, man, you're really fucking digging the music.
Yeah.
And then I went to see him live, and they blew my mind. Right here. Watch this rap.
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Jimmy B. And I'm a surefire, pure-blooded, bonafide, hot-fucking jam, more production MC. If you want the best, then put me to the test, and I'm sure you'll soon agree that I got no flaws, cause I'm down by law.
When it says comes one rhyme at the end, you see, cause my head always blows up, right?
My mama gave me a brand new toy, two turntables with a mic, and I learned to rock like a dolomite. Time went by on this God creation.
And I knew one day I would rock the nation, so I made up my mind.
The gym on production.
What ghetto crazy. Fucking go crazy man sells these words?
Be lazy.
Listen to this shit.
Stop the body rock till your eyesight starts to get hazy. clean out your ears and you open your eyes. If you
come on, motherfuckers, light that joint up. I'm telling you right now, listen to this shit.
His turn to burn.
Take the seat. Oh shit. It don't, and you haven't heard the word nigga one time. There was respect, you understand? Listen to this shit. Oh, it hasn't stopped. This is like David Gilmour's guitar on Dogs. It don't stop coming at you. Get down.
Let me rock it to the rhythm of the funk. It's after from here.
Here's the it kills my head. Jam on it, jam on it. Then the other guy jumps in. The head fucking yom goes, really? Here we go. It's what separates us from the rest, dude. I'm telling you right now. He's throwing it. Superman. He's throwing Superman in the mix. What black dude shows up with Superman? This is what I'm talking about, people.
In 84.
84. Who shows up with Superman? I'm faster than Superman.
I don't need no fans to cool my ass. I just use my super brand. I can fly 3 times
around the world without missing a beat.
I socialize with X-ray eyes and ladies.
It's too fucking good. Too good.
Oh, this is a jam, man.
This is too fucking good. People at home are like, what the fuck is he got me listening to?
Oh, this
listen,
is shit, right?
Let your shoes go. Your foot's tapping right now. This is a jam and a half, though.
With a 12-inch cap called Disco Kryptonite.
Disco Kryptonite.
Superman looked up at me. He said, you rock so naturally. I said, now that you heard the deal, let me tell you why I'm so for real. I'm Cosmo D.
Don't stop. Don't stop. Don't stop.
Don't stop. I do it right.
So I can't do it wrong. Here we go, right here.
Jam on it. I jam on it. I say jam on it. As day turns to night and night turns to day, whatever time it is, I want to hear you say
jam on it.
I jam on it. I say jam on my jam on it. Jam all around and upside down. I keep it
too much.
Jam
I'm going to do a bomb in the valley. Here we go. Here's the head movie.
Jam on it. I said jam on it.
Here we do. Here we go. Jam on it. A jam on it.
I said jam, a jam on it.
How bad is this motherfucker?
And don't get there, stop your early morning.
I'm a cruising in this?
Cruising. I remember snorting 3 8-balls for this fucking jam. I couldn't wait for my head to blow up. Kick this muley. Kick this fucking muley. Welcome to the church of what's happened now. My main goomba, Lee Syatt, my main motherfucker representing Chicago today from the fucking heart of Chicago. Oh. Not one of these okey-doke motherfuckers with a blue hat on with a seal walking around today. Because I bet if you go to fucking Starbucks, you're going to see all the fucking fair-weathered fucking jerk-offs that don't do dick about dick. They just show up. Ah! They don't know nothing. Congratulations,
thank
my
you.
Brother. Congratulations to a fucking city that deserves it with all their fucking... I mean, you know, just... When you go there, it's a pleasure to go to that fucking city. And they even talk shit about the airport. I don't give a fuck. Sometimes it's worth the walk.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a fat fuck. You need to fucking walk. Walk, you fuck. Walk.
Yeah. Well, I got a little electric sidewalk to...
Oh, my God. No, that electric sidewalk don't do dick for nobody. By the time you get there, ISIS will show up on the other side and shoot you with a fucking gun.
And it'll tell you about that, though, when you book the ticket.
Jesus, that fucking walk is brutal.
You don't like electric sidewalks?
Huh?
You don't do electric sidewalks?
Look, I take everything that can help me out. But when you're in a rush, that electric sidewalk don't do nothing to you. When
it
you
feels like you're going back in time.
When you land in O'Hara,
that's how
dog,
slow you're going.
It's all every man for himself.
Dude, I'm a chubby guy. I will sit on that electric sidewalk and not move.
Not in Chicago, you
and
won't.
And stewardesses will straight on
they
you
will
to get
fucking
past
straight
you.
On you right in the neck and shit with their luggage. And not give a Frenchman's fuck. When you're in O'Hara, you got to walk that fucking electric thing like it's the last walk of your life.
Yeah, you got a Jackie Joyner.
And don't fly, and don't connect in Detroit when you got to walk under the airport at 6 in the morning at the blue lights and shit, and you think you're in the Twilight Zone. People have no idea that I fly in the middle of the night. I fly vampire shit.
We've seen each other a couple times on flights to Vegas, right?
Yeah, to Vegas, but those are pussy flights. Yeah. Southwest.
That was fun.
I fart, everybody smells in the back. They don't even have fucking recruitment back there. They don't even have every time you go on Southwest.
That's every
give,
man for
they
themselves.
They give you a drink
you just,
and a fucking thing of the flu.
Yeah.
But Southwest ain't bad. It just gets you there in 2 hours. It, like when you get on Southwest, you know you're gonna get there.
Yeah,
like
it's like
want,
your drunk uncle.
There.
He's around.
Yeah,
He'll give you a lift.
You don't really want to take
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know.
But I'm not driving to LAX to take some fucking virgin. Who gives a fuck?
No. Southwest is okay. The terrible one is Spirit. I almost looked into flying that in a couple weeks, and I couldn't do it.
Spirit and Frontier. The insurance company just hangs up on you because they know it's a loser.
You see everyone in Spirit and Frontier in their seats with floaties on, just in case it fucking floaties, goes down.
They got like rosary beads in their fucking hands and shit. Praying. It's like, you know, you don't even want a Frontier, lost my luggage. They found it 2 countries away. You know, what? I said, just leave it there. There was nothing in there. I went on Frontier. That was horrible with a buddy pass. It was one of the worst flying experiences of my life. First, we got to land in Denver. They got a big electric sidewalk. That's another airport you don't want to connect. Where else did I? And Spirit is the southwest of the south, I guess.
Okay.
So what you do is, let's say you got to go from Atlanta to Orlando, Atlanta to Chicago. They're not bad. They got XM radio, so you can listen to the disco classics.
Gotcha.
Whatever the fuck you're into, rock classics. Like I said, listen, the whole experience of flying has really changed in this country the last 20 years. I look at it as a part of doing
people
business.
People take their fucking shoes and socks off and put them on people's chairs or on the armrest. They put their bare fucking hoofs on.
I see that.
It's unbelievable. Listen, can you imagine?
I just look up, say a prayer for them.
Planet you got to live on to put your foot that close to
if you put your feet next to me, I got to say something to you. There's going to be a fucking problem on the flight.
Yeah.
You know, in those middle aisles, that's where immigration goes all the time. Those people who don't fly a lot and they act.
It's horrible.
When I see a guy with his feet out, I say 2 prayers. One for the plane to go down, and then I retract it. And I say, I hope he gets diabetes in his feet. Those sticky Pringles and shit. They're not wearing. I'm not talking about flying in that way. It's even on the other aspect, how they treat the consumer.
Yeah.
They really don't give a fuck. They don't give you updates when you're there. You don't know what misery is till you're stuck in an airport. And for you people right now, listen to me. I know. It might be the last time you see grandma. Listen to me. 10 more days ain't going to kill grandma, okay? You get a plane ticket on January 4th, you're living like a doctor. You come back, there's no lines, you got no fucking drama. Everybody wants to fly out on Christmas. Every time I tell you right now, you want to go fly out on Christmas time? And I'm not talking about the people who leave on the 9th. They're kind of intelligent. There's some people who leave on the 9th and make 3 weeks of it, but not everybody's in that financial gain that you could take off fucking 3 weeks.
Then you just got to take down a good score wherever you're going.
Yeah.
You got to make moves where you're going to make up for the week you had to lose some
money. Call me up. I'll hook you up with fucking 22 pounds of edibles. By the time you get there, even if you don't get high, your whole fucking family will be high.
Every time we travel, you say I have to like mule something. Like, when we get there,
the last time I had him going to the airport. The last time I started here, I gave him an edible, and that night after we got off the air, I go, listen, tomorrow this a dude's because we're going to fucking Texas. I go, some guys are going to meet you at the airport. I set it all up. He's going to give me 30 large. On the way down, envelope, you drop it off over there, just drop off your suitcase, they'll give you 30 long. He started with the questions. Well, what's in the envelope? That's your concern.
Well, first of all.
The only thing you need is 30 fucking large.
It didn't start at 30 large. It started at like 10. And every time we spoke.
10's a good number.
Yeah.
That's a good number.
It's a good number, but not for federal prison.
No, 10's a round number.
Do you think I would fucking do anything to you to keep you in a federal prison?
Yeah, if
if you mule something, it's because it's taken care of from A to fucking Z.
Can I just say something here on your behalf?
Go ahead.
Do you think, let's hypothetically say you got caught.
Right, yeah.
And you go to federal prison.
Okay.
And you get brutally fucking raped in the shower.
He will not get raped.
No, hypothetically.
He's going on a mission next month.
Hypothetically.
I'm on edibles right now. I'd be having a panic attack.
But see how nervous and nerve-wracking that would be? But what happened when you got to your bunk and there's a little card from Uncle Joe?
That's right, saying,
hey, thinking about you.
There's a bidet
you.
Waiting for you at home. You know what I'm saying?
HelloTushy.com.
HelloTushy.com. Listen to me, Lee Syatt. I would.
10's a great number. That's a hot rock for a move.
Even when I was doing that flight shit, I knew I had it covered 90%. Because the most important coverage you need is in your mind. Do you know that?
Yeah, be centered.
You know, people always say to me, well, Joey, you fly with weed. No. But if I did, there's times I have a bag and fucking Listen, last time somebody gave me wax in New York at Caroline's or whatever it was, Gotham. I perform at Gotham's every year. And I was at Gotham, and somebody gave me a wax pen with a fucking chunk of wax. And I had my T-shirts. My buddy was selling me T-shirts, and I brought the little bag I got, little luggage bag, for like when I go to Vegas for 2 days or Phoenix, one of these small two-night gigs.
This is the move merch.
This was old merch. This is a couple of years ago, 2 years ago. And some guy put it in, and I took it and put it in the side zipper. You know how many times I flew with that little fucking bag?
You just forgot about
it. I forgot it was in there.
Yeah.
Do you have any fucking idea how many times? Like, it was like a year later. I went in there, and I go, holy shit. I've been flying for a year with a controlled substance. You get caught in an airport with weed, that's one thing. These fucking idiots that fly with vapor pens and waxes and shit, that's a controlled substance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if they want to be fucking evil scumbags at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then they're going to go in your luggage and they're going to find three more of those tubes. And that's 2 years apiece. You know, you have to get an attorney and blah, blah, blah.
That's mandatory sentencing round-ish?
You never know.
Yeah, it depends on what mood
you're in. You never fucking know.
Yeah.
You never know. You never know.
Fuck.
You never know what they're fucking thinking. That's why
what
I'm real.
What the fuck is wax? I've been out of the game for a minute.
Wax is this fucking
like
thing
hash?
They make, and you have to get a nail made out of metal and smoke.
Oh, I think I
it's
seen
too
that.
Much
heats
drama
it up,
for me.
Right?
Yeah, it's too much drama for Uncle Joey. I'm too old.
Yeah.
My wife can't have a blowtorch at the house. Okay? I can't have a blowtorch to get high. It don't mean that fucking much to me. Okay. I take two hits off a bong, I'm fine. Everybody's happy, you know. That's it. I'm goody-goody.
Why do you gotta complicate shit with the fucking pin?
It's always complicated. We live in a society, like I finally put it together there. We don't complicate things for ourselves. I went trick-or-treating. And the kings of complication are Gentiles. Nobody loves complications more than Gentiles. Now, you're going to understand the story. I live on Colfax, okay, between Chandler and deeper down there, like by whatever the fuck it is. In my neighborhood, there's a bunch of kids, and there was houses. We didn't have to walk on Colfax. We meet, the kids knock on the door, my little daughter sees them and goes, Daddy, I'm following the kids. I mean, that little bitch ran out of the fucking house. I'm chasing her down the street with my cowboy suit on. And she's a little girl. You know, she wants to be with the rest of the kids.
Yeah.
There's 15 kids,
yeah,
couple parents.
Yeah,
trick-or-treat. And I could tell by each look of these parents, they're all mo-mo'd up. You know, two of them in outfits. They were nice. The English women were nice. But the people who were just from the neighborhood, the white people, they had walking their dogs at the same time, tripping the kids. You know, it's always got to be something.
Yeah.
This is about kids, not the fucking dogs. Take the dog somewhere else, you know? So now we walk down, and they're like, so what's our move? And then here are these six parents, you know, who actually live in the area. We're 50 yards from Colfax. Now, my thinking is there's a driveway right above Colfax. Hit the left and go on to the next block and just zigzag the blocks this way. Eliminate Colfax altogether.
Busy street.
Especially it's 5:30.
rush hour on a busy street.
No. They couldn't. So we finally convinced them to go down Colfax one block and make the left and go into deep into the neighborhood. So by the next time, I'm trying to tire out my daughter. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to tire her out. She's been at school all day, Halloween and shit. In my mind, this trick-or-treat walk is to tire her out. I get to burn some calories. So we walk maybe two blocks. An hour later, now it's pitch dark. Guess what they want to do? One of the moms says, I just got a call from one of my girlfriends, and there's a huge neighborhood with kids are trick-or-treating. It's over on best looking whatever.
And she says it out loud so all the kids hear it, right?
Right. And she goes,
that's fucking party foul number one.
And they're like, so where is this place? And she's like, it's across Colfax, all the way down by Marie ETC, and it's 7 o'clock, 7:30. And I'm like, I look at my daughter, I look at my wife, and I go, Terry, I'm not going to Colfax with this child now. This is when people get hit by cars and says, you don't know what happened. These are the type of events that if you're not paying strict attention, something happens to somebody's child, and you're a witness to it, and you go, what the fuck? But in my mind, these people did not stop till they went on Colfax with these kids. Then they wanted to stop traffic, you know, that shit on the East. You know, listen,
my kids are special. Everyone should stop.
Let's say that this guy's drinking. You know, you ever drive past something and you go, ooh, that was a quick one. I just missed that by an inch.
Yeah.
Because this time your mind doesn't allow it to see you. It's Halloween. Maybe you ate a pot cookie at 6 o'clock. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
But that means you got to walk across Colfax and then walk back.
And you have some dingbat parent who thinks putting their hand out
is going to
stop the fucking car.
The first parent, when he did it, the cars just drove right past him. and the kids are 3 feet from him. I looked at my wife and I go, you know what? These are people who love to complicate things. They can't sleep at night until something, you know, for their friends, to impress somebody. Yeah. There's 22 fucking blocks of walking. We could have walked 22 blocks and not seen Colfax. But they weren't content until, and that's why sometimes when I read stuff or see stuff on TV, I'm not in shock anymore. Now, this is what really burns me up with this situation. Excuse me. I got left back in the seventh grade. I dropped out of high school. You know, I'm just a half a fucking mutt. These people, all college educated, all walk around like they're Socrates. That's what really kills me.
Yeah.
But when it comes to simple life decisions, they're the dumbest fucking people I
have
ever met.
They pay $250,000 to get dumber.
To get dumber. And then they move into a certain area and they dummy up to that area.
Yeah.
And they don't even see the right, they don't even see the fastball coming down the fucking pipe. It's amazing. That's when I was walking with my daughter, my wife kept saying, why are you quiet? And I told her later, I go, it baffles me that I'm a street fucking urchin. And I have more common sense than these fucking parents ever would have in their fucking lives. Then they wonder, this doesn't end till one of these kids ends in a morgue or something like that. And then they sit there and go, what did I do wrong? You're retarded. You're retarded. I mean, you just have to. So it's just,
and you know the kids are going to grow up to be like the parents. Like, you ever go to, when you drop your daughter off at school, the parents are out of their fucking minds. Cutting everybody, swearing, veering in. How do you think those fucking kids are going to grow up to be?
I just drove by a school on Sunset that they had to literally put cones and stuff in the middle of the road because people were just dropping their kids off at Sunset. They're like, you cannot drop or pick up your kids on Sunset Boulevard. And they had to literally put a sign and cones. They're like, really?
They don't give a shit. So entitled. So fucking douchey.
It's really something weird to fucking see. The reason why I wanted you on the podcast is we had a conversation maybe 6 weeks ago. And it was one of those conversations where you get off the phone with someone and you go, that was fucked up. That was a fucked up conversation. I mean, I wasn't angry at you. I just learned something. Like, I had a conversation with you, Mick, about your podcast and what was going on in your life. And you told me, you know what? I'm just shutting the lights on everything. I made a decision. I just did my last podcast yesterday.
Yeah.
I wrapped up the office, da-da-da-da. And I got up the phone and I go, this is a guy that's doing great with a podcast. It's at the peak time. You pulled the Chappelle.
Yeah, I did.
What happened?
So my schedule, this is going to... So I'll give you a snapshot of what my life was. I was getting up at about between 5:30 and 6 a.m., and I was going to bed between midnight and 1 a.m. every day, 7 days a week. So I was working on a show for Fox, which is going to premiere in March of 2017 called Shots Fired. Amazing show. The most elevated storytelling I've ever been a part of in my life, right? So I'm challenged in that area. I got this great podcast going on. I'm doing that once a week, drops Monday. Was having a little hard time getting the caliber of guest that I wanted, right? And so I was like, do I just miss a couple? And then if I miss a couple, I'd see the numbers go down. And I'm like, you know, this has to be, I'm preaching hustling on the podcast. That's the whole, my podcast is about being passionate about your life and hustling, right? So I'm like, fuck, I don't want to give anybody a subpar product. So I'm like, all right, then a guy says to me, I've been sober for 14 and a half years, married, two kids, sober in an anonymous program that part of the deal is you don't say the name, but a lot of that took a lot of my time, and that's a spiritual program where you got to like lean into God a little bit. I was raised Catholic. I don't necessarily jive with that anymore, so I don't know who or what God is, but I believe that there is a God, and I just throw my spirit to that without the risk of sounding fucking cheesy, to that every day when I get up. Hey, God, whoever you are, whatever you do, give me the strength and the courage to be the best man I can be in every area of my life. That's the general, right? So a guy who I work with says, man, you just broke down your schedule, and I'm only giving you a snapshot. I'm also going up, and I'm doing stand-up 3 to 5 times a week. I'm working on the show. I'm doing the podcast. I'm writing a book. I'm developing 2 shows. You and I met a couple times about some things you had going. Anybody that I truly respect.
And you're a dad.
And I'm a dad. I'm raising 2 kids. I mean, it was – so my guy says to me this, and it really floored me. He goes, hey, that's a pretty busy schedule. And I go, yeah. He goes, where's God in that? And I just, it was like a stick in the spokes that I had been so intensely managing every moment of my life, trying to work it and wring success out of it or wring happiness out of it, that I had a bit of moment of clarity, specifically with my podcast, which I've done for fun and for free for 3+ years, about how do you lead a good life? What does that mean? And I've had Academy Award winners, championship fighters on there, NBA champion coaches, gangsters, hitmen, you know, wide gamut of people. And I just had this moment of clarity that, with the exception of my family, I'm letting everything go. I'm just going to let it go and see what happens. So I let the podcast go. I gave up my office. I'm pitching 2 things next week, 2 TV shows I'm really excited about. But outside of that, that actually came after I let everything go. Booked no more stand-up dates, no more storytelling dates, no more public speaking dates. I do a lot of public speaking on hustling. No acting stuff, nothing. And I just got quiet. It just got quiet, and I was left with my family and just being a fucking man and making breakfast for my wife, spending time with the kids, and I got rejuvenated. I got inspired, and I feel right now like I'm 19. Like it's not, I'm 42 now, and I should be peeking out as a writer and good as a producer, and then in the downtime, I'll book, 6 weeks on the road. That may or may not happen, but if it does, it's going to be with new zeal and new perspective and a new appreciation. I set everything down, and I'd like to make an announcement on the show, man, because your show, with your help as well, is one of the shows that put my podcast on the map by you guys being kind enough for having me. Really, you guys, the Crab Feast and Burt Kreischer's podcast and Jay Moore, those 4 really drove people to my show. But I'm happy to announce that I'm going to be starting my podcast up again.
Oh, are you?
And I have not released that at all.
Were you bored without the podcast? I mean,
bored without it? I'll tell you, I got, by letting everything go, I wanted to see what came back what, not grading my success or who I am based on how I'm received by others, but the impact that podcast was having, I think I underestimated it by how many people were profoundly impacted by it, by the emails that I got when I said, hey, guys, I'm setting this down for a while. I got emails from all over the world that were stunning. And I don't think I could, after reading all of those, not do the podcast. I think I have to. Because if the whole point was to set everything down and see what comes back, no comedy club called me and said, hey, we'd like you, come do a week in, Tucson. That didn't happen. Who called were the networks. Hey, what shows are you thinking about developing? Theaters called and said, hey, we would like you to do an hour. Because, I do these storytelling things where I just come out and what I learned letting all of this stuff go was, I've done stand-up on NBC, HBO. I've done the Montreal. I've done Chicago comedy festivals. It never felt right to me. And I performed at all the best clubs in the country. I've performed at a lot of them. I'm a storyteller, man, just like you. I need to tell stories. I like telling them in theaters. And I've been trying to jam it down a comedy club's throat. And I don't think it's fair to that audience, and I don't think it's fair to me. And I learned that by setting it all down. So I did a gig up in San Francisco right before I let everything go. 100-seat black box theater, jammed it, sold it out, beautiful night, did an hour, great stories. Some were sad, some were funny, some were heartbreaking, but it was an experience. And it wasn't like, be funny every 3 fucking, every
right.
2.
No.
And it's not my jam now. So I think, not to say I'm better than stand-up, but I've let that go, and I did it for 20 years.
When you tell the story, what people don't understand is when you tell a story, the humor will come out in the story.
Exactly.
Naturally.
Yeah.
If you have to sit down and add those tags, I could see it while you're telling me the story.
Yeah.
That you've added this to the fucking story in a fucked up way to describe something. I love a story when it's just from the heart, and the humor will find itself in that fucking story.
Exactly. And I think everyone, like a comedian, I played clubs for 20 years, right? And I've just set that down. Invariably, there will always be someone that comes up and goes, I think I'm funny. I could do this. And that's great. And you tell them, start at open mics, whatever. I think people feel the same way about storytelling. I could tell a good story. And maybe you can't. But can you captivate it? You're a great storyteller. There's really like 20 of us out. It's not a big, there's a lot of comedians, but there's not a lot of people that are like, I tell stories. And they're like, well, what's that going to be like? Come fucking see me. Come see me. Sit down for an hour. Let me grab you. And then an hour later, if you don't like it, I'll give you your money back. But we're not fucking around. We've lived a life. Now I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give you an hour snapshot of a life that I've lived that would have killed you 40 times over. And I'm going to talk about what it's like being on the other side of that and really give you something that has depth and weight and humor. And I only learned that by letting all this stuff go. It was profound, man. It's been 3 months. Imagine I have that schedule and I go to 3 months of radio silence. And it's been the most beautiful, invigorating thing.
You need that.
Thing.
Listen, yeah. Guys, you need that. Yeah. We've been fucking banging it for years. And it's nice to take a break. You know, here's the thing that I deal with a lot of podcast people. A lot of podcast people hit me with emails and questions. And I think that a podcast is like stand-up. Just do it. Just do it. And the more you do it, it takes you somewhere, and where your show theme will come out.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, I had a friend that contacted me recently, goes, I've been doing my podcast for a year and a half, and nobody's coming to my comedy shows. If that's why you did the podcast, then shame on you.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half. Shame yeah, on it's you. An hour shame. Advertisement for shame your shows.
You. I want
There's
you to
no
do
value.
A podcast so you could spill your heart out there. Talk yeah. about your views on what's going on in a funny way or in a sad way or in a depressing way.
A real way.
Don't go with the status quo and just chime in to their fucking, to yeah. fuel that. You know what I'm saying? It's not worth it. A real one where you come on there and you have your friends come in, people that you know you, and tell different stories because they really want to get to know you. Before they can get to know your point of view, they need to know you. This is a lot of fucking work. But yeah. I like the people that get into it and think, I'm just going to talk shit for an hour. This guy's just talk shit for an hour. Well, shame on you.
Yeah.
It's like everything else that you tried in your life. There's always a motive. There shouldn't be a motive. There shouldn't be a fucking motive, man. And I got to tell you, in stand-up, in the 25 years, I've maybe had like 5 motives. And if you know anything about me, there's always a fucking motive. You know what I'm saying? There's always a motive. But what's, you know, like, oh my God, I didn't know Tarantino was going to be here. What a surprise. You know, that type of shit where a lot of comics are creepy
in
like
hustling.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
I've only been creepy like that like 4 or 5 fucking times. I won't let myself. You know, everybody has
an angle. They're all working an angle.
They're all working an angle. Yeah. Everybody has smoke and mirrors. Well, yeah. My podcast, I'm going to have dancers in the room. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter what you have in the room if your soul's not in the fucking room, you know? But I applaud what you did because, listen, man, it's very tough for people to take an honest look at themselves.
That's what I did. Yeah, that's bad. That sums it up.
Nothing gets my dick harder when people look at me and go, da, 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 da. Again, we always have people. I'm older, so people call me up. I had a girl call me about 18 months ago. Not a bad-looking girl. I think she's beautiful, you know, the way I look at her. There's no sexual advancements there. She's been banging it out with comedy, you know, and she left a good job and everything to come out here. And, you know, the pieces aren't falling for her fast enough.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
And I go, you know, what do you want to do? Now, don't get me on the other side of the coin. She's funny, she's attractive, but she's not hilarious. And she doesn't have a hook.
And comedy's
she
back.
She doesn't have a hook.
Comedy's back.
Comedy's
so
back.
You're competing with everyone that's been in the game for 20 years that can go out and murder. And you got to be loud. And in that scene now, you got to be loud. You have to resonate somehow, some way.
So I said to, you know, and she asked me, plant out, am I funny? She goes, because if I don't think I'm funny anymore, I'm going to pack up and move to Milwaukee, wherever the fuck she's from. And I said to her, I go, wouldn't be right for me to tell you whether you're funny or not. That's not my business at all. I'm looking at the other side of the coin. I know that you're out 5 nights a week. I know that you're writing new material. I know that you're hustling. You know, she's on the fucking sending packages to managers and agents.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is it. This is. I can't help you in anything like that. This is part of the game. You have to put your dress on and do your hair and put a ribbon in your hair and try to figure out what managers aren't involved in, like, big buildings and shit that won't let you in. And you just go. And if they don't let you in, drop it off of them. You're there.
Yeah.
At least they'll see it and they'll open it up. It's different. You got to be different. That's the main thing, you know?
So, Mick, when did you start telling stories? Because I didn't know you did comedy for 20 years. Like, did you start doing...
That sums up my fucking comedy career.
Well, I've known you since you've been here in L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, since I've been here in L.A.
No, I mean, When I would do stand-up on TV, they'd say, are you 4.5 minutes? And I go, I'd think, what the fuck can I do in 4.5 minutes? And I'd feel so awful because I couldn't serve that opportunity. You know, like someone was nice enough to go, we like what you do. Will you do it on TV? And I thought, that's when I really started to know I tell stories. Like, that's what I do. So okay. when I would headline a show, if I'm doing 45 or 50, I would have an arc to like Pryor's early work or Bogosian or Whoopi Goldberg's first special where she's doing telling stories but doing characters in and out of it, Leguizamo's first special. So it was like a hybrid of a one-person show and stand-up. But what I started to see that I enjoyed most out of all of that was the narrative as opposed to just banging on the laughs and the people that stuck with a 15-minute story. If I'm in a stand-up environment, if I'm doing a 15-minute setup, then subconsciously the payoff has to be magnanimous to a 15-minute setup. But if you're seeing me in a theatrical environment and I'm doing a story, I can get the same payoff because the audience is listening to the story in a different way. It's weird. If someone comes out and goes, now here is stand-up, some switch goes off in the brain where they're expecting to hear the cadence of stand-up. But if you say, here comes a storyteller, this person's going to tell you stories for an hour. It's going to be new to a lot of people, right? Because they're like, well, how's that? Where I haven't even experienced anything. I know what the moth is. I've heard stories for 5 minutes or for 10 minutes. How's that going to work? And I go on and I'll do stories for 45 minutes or an hour with twists and turns and an actual arc. It's an actual experience. It has something, you know, it opens with me looking at my kids and wondering whether or not I'm going to give them the full story about who I am and the stock that they come from. When can I be honest with them about that? And then I go through my experiences, and then it ends at my daughter's 8th grade birthday party where she asked me the very simple question, have you ever done drugs?
Yeah, it's not going to work when you're selling drinks on Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah.
That's
so not going to work. It's a different mechanics. Animal, it's a yeah. whole different thing. So I didn't, I think really answer the question that you had was this. When I was on Shots Fired, it was Gina Prince Bythewood and Reggie Rock Bythewood. They created the show. They were committed to the best. They wanted the best out of everybody, but they did it in a very motivating and encouraging way. But they're like, everything else can happen down here. We don't give a shit. We work up here. Not because we're smarter than everybody, but we have a very clear vision of what we want to do, how we want to execute it, and what we expect out of everybody. It's the first time in my career as a writer that I've been around the best who consistently do the best, and it made me ask the question, if I'm doing all of these things from 6 a.m. till 1 a.m, what is my best? Does my best even exist in there? How can it exist if I'm multitasking all of these things? And what would it look like to experience my own personal best? And what is and in what area? And it was too confusing. And that also motivated me to go, I gotta let all of this go to see what comes back, and then individually, one thing at a time, commit 110% with the risk of failing, with the risk of going, wow, I shouldn't be doing this, wow, maybe I'm not as good at this as I thought I was, and really to the thing that I dedicated 3.5 years on my podcast of like hustling and doing your best, I don't feel like I was doing it. So I had to let
What's
it all
What's the law
go.
Of diminishing returns?
Yeah.
Okay, it's the law of diminishing returns. You got too many fucking hands and too many pots.
Yeah.
So I do 2 podcasts a week, and I go on the fucking road.
But they're
and
all in right. the same yeah, universe, though. Those all
feed
right,
in. You're a parent, you know.
Yeah.
And when you go on stage at a comedy club, you could tell stories because I make a living off telling stories.
Exactly. That's why I said you're the exception.
But you have to throw excitement.
Exactly.
You have to throw excitement, and nobody wants to hear about their fucking kids at a comedy club. You know what I'm saying? Very lightly do people want to fucking hear about. You know, because somebody else I know is having a problem with this. He was like, I'm trying to tell a story, and they're not taking the ride. And I thought about it in the car, and I thought about it, and I go, you know what? 10:30 on a Saturday, I want to hear about fucking kids. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about fucking kids. I've been drinking, snorting blow. I want to hear about what fucking Hillary's going to do or what this asshole's going to do. And then you could tell a story that reflects about everything that's going on.
Yeah.
See, that's what works.
And you got we perform it. We know how to perform.
Yeah, we know how to perform.
And I was having a great... Clubs were like, whenever you want to come back. I was dissatisfied. They were like, this is great. People are coming out to see you. And I was like, this isn't working for me. I think there's something better. And I have to... Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm committing to see if that's right. If I can perform it that way in an environment where there are no drinks. I mean, a lot of my audience is sober, too. Former savages, you know, that are just raising kids that used to be lunatics that are out trying to lead the best life possible that they can. I mean, when I played Chicago, man, we sold the shit out of that. That was fucking great. There's a great little theater. Shout out to the WIP Theater in Edison Park on Northwest Highway. Those guys have always been very kind to me. They actually just got their liquor license, but it was a little theater environment. And it, you know, the premise of this hour, I just spent the last year and a half working on a new hour, is that being an adult is the most fraudulent thing I've ever been a part of. That's the premise of the whole fucking new hour. It's just, you think when you're a kid and you grow up, adults are going to have all the answer. Nobody knows a fucking thing. Everybody's looking at each other like, do you know? Do you know? Nobody knows nothing. We're raising fucking kids.
I don't know nothing. I don't want to know nothing.
Yeah. Everybody I knew did drugs, stole shit, fought, and fucking now they're telling you got to do your homework. I got to look my son in his eye and go, you got to fucking study. Who the fuck am I to say that? You know? It's all fraudulent. And the feeling of fucking shame and compromise I got going, well, maybe he's going to hopefully have a totally different life than I had and not have to experience any of that shit. I don't know. But I had to take him to the fucking graveyard and tell him his grandmother was a bisexual bank robbing fucking prostitute. So, you know, sometimes life's complicated.
It's not. I live in a sham too, but you
got to do what you got
to
do.
You make your fucking, I paid my debts to society.
Yeah.
I move on. When she gets to be old enough, I'll sit it down, tell her what happened in my own words.
Yes.
I'm not proud of it, but I am.
And that's the complication that I'm interested in, Joe. That little thing that you just said, the bridge from those two situations of now and when you have to have that conversation, to me, is fascinating.
Fascinating. I don't worry about it. I don't feel guilty about it. I do the best I can, and I did something with my life. So
yeah.
It's like everybody else. You said the 20s are for you to fuck up. I fucked up. And I fucked up some of them in the 30s. And I tell you what, I fucked up 2 or 3 years of my 40s. So, but we cleaned that shit up. You know, I was just, I've always been amazed when people walk away with something and put it into like more of a micro thing. You know, you like doing this theater thing. Listen, storytelling is a niche. And there's a big business behind it. There's a big business behind it. As you see, we as comedians, we now have a storytelling show on one of the Comedy Centrals. One of the Ari channels. Show, you know, does that mean that's a staple? No, somebody's going to come up with a better one and put it on HBO or, you know, it's out there. Will the room start popping up for storytelling? Fuck yeah. I know there's one, the girl that was on here.
Lee. Oh, right.
Yeah, the girl was
Susanna
Lee. Monday nights, and she packs them in down there.
Yeah.
They change themes, you know. She has a back room. What's the name of that place? On Vine, next to the with Pacquiao trains. There's the Three of Clubs.
Three of Clubs, yeah.
The Three of Clubs.
Oh, it's a nice venue.
Yeah, they do shit now. Storytelling's back. Everybody, I love it.
Yeah.
I love to go down there and feel free, you know, and that's what I think freed my comedy. The first time I started telling stories in 99, the Belly Room, I was a different monster because you're not going for the laugh.
Yeah.
And that teaches you a different aspect of the game. It teaches you a little bit more control. It takes away that cheesy comedy feeling that you have to deliver a joke every 3 minutes and take your shirt off and giggle.
Yeah.
It took that away from me. It really did. It was like, oh, my God, there's another aspect of this.
Yes.
Now how to make it grow is the faux patois. Now here we are fucking, 16 years later? There's a storyteller show on. I put out 5 albums and just stories, testicle testaments, you know? I mean,
just for the priest? That was
what? Yeah. No, that was the CD, the comedy. But this is, I put out $2 storytelling CDs, iTunes. And I talked about the kidnapping. I talked about just doing coke, you know? And they were like 2 hours, weren't they, Lee? We would fucking go for hours. We'd go for fucking hours, edit them. And I really believe in that genre. I really believe in it. I think that the next 2 or 3 years, I know HBO will come up with something because they'll get celebrities. You know, they'll get Ray Liotta to talk about his time on Goodfellas.
Yeah.
I mean, for me to pitch a show would be like a TV show. I would pitch it about situations. I would get the 3 guys from the Munsters to tell us a half hour of Munster stories.
The Moth does that. It's a theme. You show up, it's a theme, they do a great job.
What's the guy that's on Blue Bloods now? Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
To go on with the black guy and the other dude and talk about Macum PI, whatever that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's so many avenues for this. You could do this with musicians.
Yeah.
Get three band leaders together to get Def Leppard. Talk about the 81 tour with Motley Crue, whatever the fuck, whoever they were on tour with, AC/DC, Judas Priest. There are so many different fucking venues. I would love, you know, I read the one Aerosmith book, and I was always baffled on why they didn't do more books like that, or that didn't become a TV show. And it's basically Steven Tyler would tell a story about the situation, Joe Perry would, Brad Whitford would, and it's amazing drugs, what drugs does to your mind about memories. But it also, each of them also took a particular event from all of them. So something like that, just have a moderator, Eddie Trunk, come out and go, tonight we're going to talk about the album Rocks by Aerosmith. And these five just tell stories about that fucking album, you know?
Yeah.
There's hours of countless of this shit, you know? We love stories as Americans.
We do. And I think when I was 19, I might have fucking told you this story already. When I was 19, this guy goes, I got a last minute scholarship to college, and part of the deal was teaching in between. Hold on one sec.
Keep talking.
Can't relapse on your podcast. they said, we're going to have this guy tell a story. I'm 19. I'd never heard of a storyteller before. I mean, I knew what stories were, but like a guy who called himself a storyteller? Like, what the fuck? Who does that? It's this old guy. He's like 60, ambles out. He was old then, not so old now. And he goes, hey, my name's, I think his name, I know his first name was Joe. I think it might have been Joe Liebman or Joe Lieberman. He goes, I'm a storyteller. And I'm like, what? I'm 19. You know, I know everything. And he goes, I'm going to tell you the story. And it's a room full of 19-year-olds. He goes, I'm going to tell you the story of the Telltale Heart. And I go, the fucking Edgar Allan Poe thing? He goes, yeah. I go, well, you can read it out of a book? He goes, will you sit down and I'm going to tell you this story? So I go, okay. And I'm looking around, everybody like, what the fuck is this guy going to do? He starts telling the story. The whole thing, you know, the guy's got the body, the detectives are there at the kitchen table. He's got the body buried under the floors. He's freaking out. He thinks they know, and you can fucking hear the heart beating. And then finally, he just screams at the cops at the end, I did it, I did it, right? When he screams, everyone, including me, jumped. And I thought, this fucking guy got me. How did he get me? How the fuck did this guy get me? So he goes, all right, I'm going to, next class is coming in. And so we're all leaving. And I go, are you going to tell the next class the same story? He goes, yeah. I go, can I stay? And he goes, absolutely. So this time, I watched the audience as he told the story. And everyone, arms crossed, legs crossed, pouty, guys elbowing their friends, this fucking jackass, right? And then the arms uncross, the legs uncross, the posture starts to slouch. Then they're leaning in, fucking hands on their faces, rapt attention, anxiety. They couldn't fucking believe it. He screamed again. Everyone fucking jumped. He got him back to back. Story was about 20 minutes long. I couldn't fucking believe it. It was a pivotal moment in my life. To answer you, like, when did I know? When did I want? I watched a guy do it. It's the difference between Steven Tyler coming and telling a story and a professional. It's the guy that can make people at work laugh and the comedian. Like, to be a real legit storyteller, I've studied preachers, pimps, cops, and Marines for command presence, theater, Second City, acting classes, voice classes, all of that stuff, the nuance, watch the greats, how to create a narrative that blasts right through you, grabs you by the fucking heart, and drags you towards me. That's what I want to do. That's the best that I'm searching for. Ooh, we got some North Hollywood shit going out on the corner.
Fuck yeah.
It's interesting because you guys were talking about podcasts earlier, and I firmly believe that, similar to something that we've talked about with comedy before, is that there's going to be different kinds of podcasts. There's going to be podcasts of stories, there's podcasts with improv, and it's something similar what you're going through. Like, everyone, like, there's alt comedy and this and that comedy, but you have 20 years of experience telling, like, keeping people's interest.
Yeah.
So now that you're going to maybe not only funny stories, you're still going to be years ahead of, like, an author who wants to read their books or something.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I'm trying to fold that in and see what that looks like. And the first, because I just finished a book, right? So October 1st, I handed in my memoir, right? took me longer than I'd care to write, but I had all those other things going on, and now I'm in the process of rewriting that. That's all I'm doing. I have two pitches, and if those go, that'll be great, but all I'm focusing on is this memoir. So I'm taking all the 20 years of stand-up, acting gigs, improv stuff, all of it, and I hopefully this book gets published in 2017, and then I tour the book in theaters, and I will perform the stories that are in the fucking book. You get to come see them live. You walk out into the lobby. You can get a copy, take a picture with you, get the book discounted at the shows. I'm going to do all of it. I'm working with the editor and the agent right now. She actually just emailed me. The first round of notes are coming out on the 21st. She's going to mail them to Chicago because I'm going to be in Chicago the 19th through the 29th. And that's it. That's all I'm focusing on is this fucking book to make the best that I can, my personal best, this book, put it out, then tour that book.
Now, will it be in stores, or are you planning on e-booking it? What is your strategy for this book?
She's fairly confident. I have a literary agent in New York that read the first draft. She's like, I'm in. She used to be an editor. We're going to do the book in thirds. So the notes on the first third are coming out the 21st. It should probably take me about a month to turn around. So 3 months from now, early 2017, should have a draft ready to send out to publishers and set up. And then whatever their time frame is, but she's very confident that she could set it up somewhere. She's happy with the way that it was written. And I would love, that's a dream come true, man, to walk into a bookstore
and see your
fucking
book on the shelf.
I mean, are you that? To me, if I'm being totally fucking honest, if I let all this go of what I really, really wanted since I was a kid, was to write, right? I've always been writing, and I love, sometimes I get to perform what I wrote. Other times, people just get to read it. I send it out. But that, to me, was been the dream to be a published author since I was fucking third grade, writing stories. We had a great hustle, me and this kid, Mike Kona. We would get copy paper from the office at the school, and we would do comic books and write, but include the kids in the school and the teachers. We'd sell them for a quarter, but because we included them, we sold more because they wanted to see what they were up to that week. It was a great
fucking
hustle.
It's a great idea. It's a great fucking concept. More kids should be doing that now in schools. That's the way to get fucking real writing and fucking coloring experience. Nah, I believe in you got to shut a door before another one opens. And a lot of people don't believe that concept. You know, listen, man, as fucked up as this sounds, I have an out for this stand-up game. You know, I have an out when I want to really start being around my child.
Absolutely.
Now I can do what I want. I got 2 years till she has to be in the first grade, but I have 2 years to make a decision. I would still continue to do the podcast. I'd still continue to write. I'd try to get myself like a magazine job, maybe writing articles or some piecework. I really don't give a fuck. It's just that the stand-up game for me takes a lot of my fucking time.
That's it, man.
But this is the game I chose.
Yeah.
And this is the level I've gotten to. How, I don't have no fucking idea. It just, I kept working on it and believing in it, and I'm going to play this hand out, but there's an out. You know, I'd love to be Don Rickles at 90.
He's playing fucking Canyon Club in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Canyon Club, you know, but I need a fucking out. There's got to be an out to make me happy. I've always had a dream of living in a fucking regular little redneck community and maybe getting a fucking job at a truck store with good old boys, and if I sell four trucks a month, I make my nut, you know. I don't need to kill myself. You know, there was a time when I understood the value of killing yourself for what you believe in and your home and stuff. I don't believe in those values anymore. I don't have them. I've switched them to more of a family type thing, you know, where I'd rather take that energy and spend it with my family. My firm belief when I got married was that the man went out and worked fucking 14-hour days, and we put away money, and we had all this, and we supplied a household and shit like that. And you did that till I tell you when to do that, because I could see myself doing that as a young married guy, and that's why that relationship didn't work, that on top of a lot of other things. But now, when it's time to work for me, it's time to work. Thursday morning comes along, fuck you and the horse you rode up on.
Yeah.
I'm on a fucking plane. This is what I enjoy. On the way out, my wife, we got the house, the car. You know, my wife doesn't have to work, which means more in the world to me than anything.
You and me both. You know,
at this time right now, where the baby's at.
Yeah.
If I didn't have a child, my wife would be working more than fucking me. I'd whip that mule because them bitches could work, Jack. You know. But no. And I tell her all the time, you know, I just had an interesting thing. When I first moved up here and my wife, you know, when you have a child, you obtain different friends. And they're out of their fucking mind up here. You know what I'm saying? The friends you meet in this area here with parents, parents are totally out of their mind. We became friends with them, chit-chatted, met them for dinner with the children. The children played. She's very nice. He's really cool. He's one of us. She's very nice, but I don't think she knows how crazy this white boy is. I mean, he's out of his fucking mind. He came to one of my shows in New York and hooked up with my buddies, and they disappeared for an hour. They went to get a package. I'm like, he does packages? I thought this guy that was the nicest white dude in America. Anyway, you know, he's an actor, like a theater actor, and small roles, and but a lot of voiceovers. He's part of that voiceover community. Gotcha. So we were talking one day, like after we knew him for 2 years, and all of a sudden they're like, did we tell you we're moving back to New York? What are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, we're moving back to New York, and the careers for him are better in New York. And I'm listening to all this, and I'm looking at their lives here. They're at the park every day, and she flies on the weekends. She's a photographer.
Gotcha.
Like a well-known wedding photographer, like loot.
Like, oh, there's a lot of money.
Yeah,
man.
Like loot, like... You want to go to Hawaii? Like, they don't even give a fuck when she throws them her number. She does two of those a month, and they can live like doctors. And now, we just got a note. They're coming back. You know? And I'm like, my wife is like, what do you think about that? I go, do you think I'm fucking surprised? Do you think I'm fucking surprised? I was born and I'm fucking New York. When you look at me, you're like, that dude's from New York. I can't look like any New York, Israel, or some gorilla farm. Fucking let him on the loose. When you look at me, there's only three places I can fucking be from, okay? I love New York City. Am I lonely to hang out with my fucking friends at night? Fuck yeah. By now, Lee would have got shot twice. Twice. He would have got shot once in the shoulder, one in the leg, one for ordering something bad at a restaurant, because my buddies don't accept that shit. We don't order shitty food at restaurants. And two, for asking for ranch.
I don't ask for ranch.
Or some salang mak sauce that they order. My buddies would have shot him in the fucking shoulder already by now. Like, don't bring this guy no more. He can't, you know. There's a lot of things I miss about New York City. I'm lonely at times. I can do a lot more stand-up at night.
Yeah.
But I go to myself, that's a hard life compared to what I'm doing out here. We got the podcast. We don't have to drive in traffic. I was in Edgewater. That's where they live, in Edgewater. I was in Edgewater one night. You know when you open your curtains at the hotel? Like, I opened up the curtains. I go, oh. I looked outside at 6:15. The traffic didn't move. I fucking opened my thing, rolled a joint, licked it. I was just watching the traffic. I was, you know, like when you do like, let me roll three joints for the night. It's a little early, but I'm entertained by this traffic. Yeah. I can't imagine living here. I told my wife I got an audition. Okay? Got an audition. I had to be in the city the next day. Let's pretend it was a 10 for the Uber.
Yeah.
Then it's 18 for both ways to go over in the fucking ferry, okay? That's 9 each way. Joey, could you get a little cheaper? Yeah, maybe 5 for the bus, okay? So maybe 10. When I got to the city again, I Ubered. It was a 20 there and another 20 to go from CAA to the fucking ferry back. So what you're telling me is I dropped fucking 70. And that was without any nourishment or a newspaper. I lied. I got a hot dog and a fucking whatever.
And now you're a C-note out the door.
You're in New York City. You're dropping all fucking day.
Yeah.
I ain't saying nothing to you, Lee. Am I cheap with you? Do I love you, Lee? Am I spontaneous with you? Do we give a fuck? Do we have a budget, Lee? Do we even live like that? Do we say those words? No. There's days I don't have cash for 5 fucking days because you use a stupid ATM card. Where do we go? 7-Eleven? I don't do shit. There's days I go home and look at my account and go, Joey, you got to go out there and spend something. And then I thought, it's the weed store. I'll take $100 cash advance for weed. But besides that, I went to New York and I looked at the cash I spent in 3 days in New York. And I don't do that, guys. You know me, I eat Cuban food at the wrong restaurant. I had Chinese food at an Italian.
What was the name of the fucking Chinese Cuban place?
Chan's Dragon Inn. Oh, the Cuban steak joint I went to?
No, you said there was a Cuban Chinese place.
Yeah, like Arida. But look at this.
Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah. Trust me. He's about to show you. He has the full menu on his phone.
Look at this. Look at this. And Lee knows Papa don't fuck around. Lee knows if you want to fuck around.
He has the menu and the combo number next to it.
Go hang out with your buddies if you want to fuck around. But look at this. Just and this, I show this to you Because, again, I don't want you to say, fuck, Joey's fucking crazy, dog. He don't do dick. He don't...
And while you're looking for it...
Look at this. Two Cuban sandwiches, steak. Two Cuban steak sandwiches, a milkshake.
A milkshake? What kind of milkshake?
A papaya. Mame.
What?
And two Cuban steak sandwiches, a milkshake, and two fucking diet sodas. $21.50, okay? You know, you look at this and you go, out here, it's 21. Look at the Cuban steak sandwich. With the, they cook the fries with the fucking beef. That's been there for 30 years.
Saltado, papas fritas, saltado.
Te lo meten ahí, compadre, con sandwichito. Ay, Dios mío. With some fucking hot sauce. You have no idea who you're fucking with. You know what I'm saying?
Ooh, look at the roll, too.
Look at the roll. Look at this here. Oh, no, no. Look at this. Look at this shit here. This is enough. Look at this fucking... What is this? Oh, that's the steak and eggs at fucking... at Original Joe's. I'll throw that in there.
Most people post these on Instagram.
Shout out to... I just went to Los Balcones, the place I told you about, that Peruvian spot on Vine and De La Prairie. Oh, you motherfucker.
Right down the block from Gotham. Perfect. When they got a fucking... Look at the Strombolis.
They got little fucking strombolis. They hit him in the oven for about 5 minutes. Yeah. God. Melt that little cheese.
Bite into the middle. Forget. I even got this motherfucker pepperoni roll, and I took a bite out of it long distance on Periscope.
Calzone with the little ricotta.
Yeah, a little ricotta in the fucking thing. I just give it up. I'm not going to get it here, so I just live my life, and I accept it
that's
for what the fuck it is. What's the what?
Well, that's the rub. You're out here, you got to, you know, you pick your poisons out here, but you're not. It's never, ever, 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 ever going to be back home. And then you can't go back. Like, I go back now, it's a different city.
It's a different city. I can't. I would go to, like, I told my wife, I go, listen, I could have got a wild bug in my ass, came back, told blue smoke up your ass, cost a bunch of money, carried these cats across the fucking country in a car, shivering the whole fucking time, to move to New York, association fees, traffic.
Yeah.
You know, I live here to avoid all that.
Yeah.
I surround my day to avoid all this shit.
We also live in a place where people shat on for many years in L.A., the Valley. Oh, you live in the Valley, the Valley. Now everyone's moving to the fucking Valley.
It's the only way to go. I got like everything I need up here. Let me get chill. Some shout-outs. I got everything I fucking need.
Yeah.
Bobby and Crystal down there. We're going to see them in Houston next week. Lee's coming down to the fucking Come and Get It Festival on the 18th. Shad Reese, Jesse Shaw, Gino Robles, David Kirkpatrick, Lee James, Amy Cleans up nicely, and my main lover, Martha. How's that one for you and shit? You know what I'm saying? No, I love... I like people I talk to, and every once in their life, they cut... It's called cutting the fat out of your life. And people never accept it, but you have to do it for the right reasons. You have to know when to close that door. And you have to know when to be honest with yourself, you know?
Someone from New York's calling right now.
I mean, I figure how the fuck people, when they go home and go, you know what, this acting's been enough for me. I've had a great time. I'm moving back to Iowa. I'm going to take all my dad's butchery. I'm going to live like a human fucking being. And it's time still that I have that dream.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't have a dad with a butchery at home. You know.
A business to hand down.
I don't have a grandma that owns a flower shop that's dying to sell it. You know, some little bum town that has a small community and everybody knows everybody. You know, when I went to Chicago, one thing I did notice about Rosemont and the communities out of there is that there's a sort of respect. People know each other. I mean, when we went to get the steak sandwich, what was the name the first day with Josh?
Al's, right?
Al's.
We went to Al's.
We went
Al's
twice.
Beef. Yeah, Al's beef's good.
Al's beef is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's so weird. Even the people there were very nice. And Lee said it. He lost his phone and somebody turned it in. That his friend in fucking in Vegas, they threw him out of the hotel. He's like, at least can you put the video on to see who stole my phone? Fuck no, you know?
And it's a stand-up town. I miss it. I miss it a lot. I'm happy for the city because the Cubs won.
Oh my God!
I mean, it's just fucking great.
Oh my fucking God! When today the black pitcher and the manager would have got assassinated. Manager with the glasses on like that. Here, I could already see red little dots on him towards the end of the game. He had a sniper up there and fucking on one of the cross the street rooms that was prepared. He already got the call from the Giannino brothers.
Like the two Escobars.
Yeah.
Like that fucking documentary.
As soon as they lose, shoot that motherfucker right in the eyeball. Like the guy in The Godfather when he put his glasses on.
Yeah.
He was standing there. He looked goofy as fuck with those glasses on. He pulled that dude. and then put the big black dude on, and the black dude knew his fate too. Did you see him?
Oh, yeah, he was fried, man. He
didn't smile.
Chapman was shot.
He didn't smile till they took the lead. Until then, he was sitting that thing going, who do I leave my car stereo to and shit? I spent 30 G's on that motherfucker. You ain't just going to shoot. He knew they were going to put him in the room with the kid who made the catch. That kid disappeared. They got him in a room somewhere. They're still smacking him. Today, they finally let him go, and they gave him water and a sandwich. They go, listen, it's going to be all right.
We're just kidding.
What's that? How long ago was that?
Which one?
When the kid.
Bartman. Oh, Bartman.
Yeah.
Oh, that was 2002, I think, or four. Four. 2004.
There's some crazy guy in Chicago. Got him in a basement right now. And every day during training season, he kicks him. And every time the Cubs lose, he just kicks him and shit. And one last night, this morning, the guy came down with like eggs and breakfast and flowers. The kid's like,
what was that Korean movie where the guy was locked in the room for fucking 30 years? Remember that? And Josh Brolin just did the remake with Spike Lee directing. That was it. They had
fucking lock that white kid, kick him every day. And today was his day. Today was his lucky day. Guess what? The Cubs won. What year is it? He's like that Vietnam vet Rambo saved.
His beard down to his feet.
Yeah, the guy's like, what year is it? 1985. And the guy just looks around the room and shit.
Brian Dennehy opens the door in the sheriff's outfit.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That poor kid. That poor fucker.
Do you think there's a chance he still lives in Chicago? I think
no. He had to move to Europe.
Did he really?
Yeah, they published his work address and home address in both papers. And they had to have police cars in
there's
front of his 30, house for 30 like a year.
About
yeah.
it. That oh, is yeah. fucking crazy.
I know, yeah.
That is crazy. That kid deserved every kick, every punch he was about to get, that poor
they
kid.
They had to cover him in coats. There's YouTube footage of them getting him out of Wrigley, and knuckleheaded second from the left on the evolutionary chart Chicagoans are like, is that the fucking guy? Is that the guy? And they're trying to get to him, and undercover cops are like whacking these drunk motherfuckers to get him off.
Well, they Bartman, had to make like
covered
an escape.
In coats.
Yeah, yeah,
they
like
covered him in coats. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, people take their sports seriously, man.
Crazy.
If they would have lost last night after they had the lead, because I called Lee, and I go, Lee, you know this is still a grand slam away.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden pop, and I go, oh, no.
Yeah.
It's 6 the fuck up. And then they really threw that juice salt into the fucking scab. They threw a rain delay at you. That's the kiss of death right there.
That, if
because,
we, yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. the kiss of death because the game has to shut off at 1 a.m. But if there's a rain delay, they will substitute that time so the game could go till, if they rain delay
oh,
for 32.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Game shut off at 1. You do know that because 1 o'clock Chicago time is 2 a.m. in fucking the East Coast.
Yeah.
I know this because when I was a child, there was a fucking game that went on until fucking 92 innings. Started at 7:30 and at 1 in the fucking morning, they're still playing out there. And they had to cancel the game and it opens up the next day as a tie. So it becomes a doubleheader.
I wonder what they would do. Like they would have to just play the game 7 of the World Series. I don't think that'd be crazy if they did that.
If it wasn't for that rain delay, I think the Cubs would have lost because the momentum was so heavy on the Cleveland side, so heavy that they had shut the Cubs down top of the ninth. Going into the bottom of the ninth, Cleveland was ready to get someone on base, ready to score, and that rain delay just shut everything down. Cleveland was hot, ready to win the fucking World Series, shut down, pause button. Hayward rallies everybody, calls a meeting in the middle of the rain delay. Hayward's been struggling the entire series. And made his salary, earned his spot on that team by giving everyone a motivational rally speech during the delay that calmed everybody down and shifted the momentum. And I think it was 3 up, 3 down, or they might have had somebody on first in the bottom of the ninth. And then the Cubs went on the tear, top of the 10th, and Cleveland never caught up. But if it wasn't for that rain delay, I really believe the Cubs would have lost.
What were you thinking when they tied it? Because I come from Boston. I still remember.
Oh, same thing you felt.
I still remember. Well, here's the thing. Because Joey told me that you were coming on, and I was thinking about what I went through in 04. And I was excited. I think it was like a freshman in high school. And it was like the big cowboy up thing. It was huge. But I don't want to say I'm jealous, but I was only 17, something like that. I can't imagine the euphoria of like a grandparent. Like I saw, like I've been watching videos all day of like grandpa seeing, and I saw this guy went and drove to Indiana to listen to it with his father's gravesite.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that I almost feel like I got gypped out of it a little bit because I had only really been like interested in the Red Sox. Maybe 10 years?
Yeah.
Like, how long could I really be involved in it?
Yeah.
So, like, everyone else was excited. I went to the parade. I wore my parade shirt yesterday in support of the Cubs from 04. But I can't imagine being your age or 80 or whatever. And
my age or 80. Well,
just... there's obviously a lot in between.
Yeah,
like 50.
It means a lot because I watch the Cub lose a lot, and
right?
I think for a long time before the Ricketts bought the Cubs and hired Theo Epstein from
God damn it,
it's unbelievable. That guy's never gonna. I mean, to bring both Boston and the Cubs into World Series championships is incredible managerial and leadership skills. But I think like. If you have a last place team or a team that's always struggling and you're still selling out the jerseys and you still sell out every game, there's very little motivation to win. The type of cutting edge, biting, you know, really dominant wanting to win that you need, like not that you need struggle, but you know that really like deep down within you desire to win. It's very difficult to have that when they're not spending the money, which they did. They brought up their farm system, which they did. Why would you do that if you're getting paid and you're losing? The management isn't going to do anything about that. When Ricketts bought the team, I think the whole idea was he was a fan of Cubs baseball, lived across the street from the stadium, loved the team, and loved to win. Brought Theo Epstein on to create a culture of winning. And that's what you need, not lovable losers. That was the moniker of the team. Lovable losers. How the fuck are you going to win until you completely change that mindset? And I think that's what they did, starting with their AAA system and bringing up and nurturing winners. It's fascinating. I mean, I'm fascinated with that. You know, you said you made some mistakes in your 20s, 30s, a little bit in your 40s. Me too. I'm fascinated with
I made a mistake
science.
Yesterday by not betting fucking Chicago. That's the mistake. Oof. I made right there.
We made mistakes not betting. It was like 500 to 1.
I should have dropped 200 just to watch the fucking game.
Yeah.
It's amazingly that I wouldn't. I checked and I said, when are the games this week? And they said, game 6 is Tuesday. I don't know what day it was. Maybe Sunday, somebody asked me, or Monday. And I said, when is the game 7? Thursday? And they go, no, Wednesday. And I go, done. Like in my mind, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. When they won Tuesday, Wednesday, I walked around all day. And I got to be honest with you motherfuckers, man. I just thought about being 10 and going to see the Mets play the Reds and when Pete Rose beat up Buddy Harris. And I thought about being younger than that. And my mom, you know, I was 6 when the Mets won the championship in New York. And, you know, just walked. Jumping up and down with my mom, and I thought about those memories. I thought about when Pittsburgh won.
Yeah,
I thought about one of the worst World Series of my life. That to this day, I preach it: the Cincinnati Reds against the Boston Red Sox. To me, a great series for many reasons. You know, for Carlton Fisk hitting the home run, for just the excitement. What it, you know, staying up and my mom calling me, going, "You got to go to bed at 10. Fuck you." And hanging up on it and fucking staying up till midnight to watch the Reds and Johnny Bench and just to...
Rose, man.
Just to have that
this week
as a
in
child.
Baseball on Saturday mornings with Johnny Bench. Remember that?
Yes.
A little before your time, Lee, but...
Oh, my God. Just the feeling of being a kid and when they showed the camera of the guy with his son last night, I had a nervous breakdown. I'm like, because he's going to remember that forever. That little kid is going to remember that till his 60, till he takes his son to see them win again, hopefully in the next 108 fucking years. Oh, but don't think, you know, the honesty about both those two teams, and I hate talking a lot of sports on the show, but they didn't demand the respect today, is that they're both great teams, like the guy said last night.
Oh, my
they're
God.
They're both going to be there for the next 3 or 4
Cleveland
years. Unless
played like savages.
And they're young. That little young Puerto Rican kid.
Oh, my God. That shellac. Yeah. Bomb to left.
And I love their manager, Terry Francona.
Yeah.
I haven't watched baseball in a while. It just, I even called, Joey called it like the fourth inning. I said I was bored. And I don't know what, if I don't have a team in the race, I kind of check out. But after I went and I made dinner and I came back at like the 6th inning and I started watching and they showed the clip. The clip that got me was when Dave Ross and Anthony Rizzo were talking and Anthony Rizzo was like, I can't control my emotion.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, like you're what, like 21? And then they said he beat cancer and now he's like an MVP and now he can't control his emotions. And that's when I checked in, in like the sixth inning.
Yeah.
Because then that's like the best time to go watch baseball.
They suck you in. And listen, yeah, man.
Great stories.
You think I was following Chicago in June? You want me to tell you that I knew Chicago was when it went in June? Do you want me to tell you that I thought Cleveland was the team in June? I wish I got those psychic powers, but no. I wasn't cheering for a fucking team like that.
Yeah.
I was cheering for what I was watching, for America. I was cheering for fucking, because that's what I grew up on. That was the Bible. October is baseball vibe. I don't give a fuck what plans you got. There was no way I was doing a podcast last night. There was no way, just out of respect to me. Like the day, I'll do a podcast on Christmas while they're stabbing Jesus, while Jesus is coming out of the womb, before I do a fucking podcast on fucking during the World Series.
I
don't give a fuck about the NBA basketball. I really don't give a fuck about football because of the halftime show. Baseball, they've kept it pure. There's no halftime show. There wasn't a section of celebrities, you know, beside Bill Murray, and I accept that motherfucker because he's been there since day one.
Goofy
as he is with his jacket. That's what it does to people.
Yeah.
This is your team. And I sit here every fucking week and I get mad at Lee that I don't have a team. Like, I didn't have stock in the team.
Take the Cubs. Get into the Cubs.
Cubs now because now they're going to look at me and go, you fucking traitor.
No.
Yeah.
That's the city. You just did your special there. That's how beautiful the city is, man. People are like, take the team.
I wish I could be a fan of the Dodgers. There's something about the Dodgers that bother me completely. I like them. I like watching them. I'll watch games at night. If I'm home for an hour, I'll watch three innings of a Dodger game. You know, I wish I had a team so I could have a part of that in my life, you know?
You don't follow the Mets? Because that's the thing. I lose respect for people when they tell me they switch teams.
Well, yeah, me too. I just can't.
You should just give it a chance, man. It's one of the funnest teams to be a fan.
You know what happened to me when I was a fan? I didn't like how involved and how personal I took shit. I can't deal with that shit yet.
No.
I can't believe how involved and how personal I took shit. I don't like that. Because at the end of the day, it's a fucking sports team. Why am I crying? Why am I throwing shit? Why am I kicking TVs? I had one jersey in my life.
Why is the dog not breathing?
Yeah, I had one jersey in my life. I had a jersey of the Sixers in 1976 when Julius Erving played. I wouldn't take
that jersey. Be worth about $3,000 right now.
I wouldn't take it out of the house. I wouldn't sweat on it. I would just put it on when I was home, and especially I would watch it with a Laker game. When I was watching the Sixers game by myself, I'd watch this fucking thing. And we had this retarded kid that lived right behind me. It was just his fucking birthday a couple months ago. Somebody called me and they said, we'd like you to fly out and do fucking comedy for this Gugutz's birthday, Jimmy Bianco. I said, what Jimmy Bianco are you talking about? The one that lived on Charles Court? They go, yeah, tell that motherfucker I never want to see that cocksucker again. We were kids. He was half retarded. He had got hit in the head with a fucking brick or something. And he'd walk around and give predictions. And sometimes people would punch him. Like, he was one of those guys. He had long hair and a beard. And sometimes people would punch him in the head. I wasn't a bully.
And he'd shit two golden coins.
Like, people would punch him and shit like, Jimmy, get the fuck out of here, you know? And one day, I kind of became friends with Jimmy. He would talk. I would shoot hoops in my backyard. He would come to his fence. And I gave him some love. I mean, who the fuck am I to turn down somebody? And I talked to him about this or that. But he was really, like, for a nerd, he was very sports-oriented. And somebody told me that when you make a bet, talk to Jimmy Bianco. He's got
he's reading the stats and shit.
He's got supernatural powers and shit. So I played him for a couple times. Jimmy, what do you got tonight? He was, yes. Tonight the Sixers are giving six. And I would just look at the paper and he would fucking win. This went on for like fucking a year. This cocksucker long-haired hippie was like 21-1. And here I am sitting here fucking stealing bikes with Valentine and robbing my stepfather. I could have been making a mint with this fucking moron. So Julius Erving joins the fucking Sixers. And guess what? He becomes a Sixer fan. So me and him talk Sixers all the time. He knows stats. He knows body types. He knows biorhythms. I mean, he's hit me from every direction. He tells me one day, the Sixers are in the finals against the Portland Trailblazers. And he's telling me the Sixers in six. And he, like, I was done. I went upstairs. I took every dollar I could. I robbed my stepfather. I took pennies from Santo Lazaro. I took quarters. I sold everything I could. And I put a grand fortune of, like, $750 when I'm in the seventh grade, I'm the fucking Sixers because Jimmy Bianco. Plus, I had a deal. I was going to bum another yardstick from my mom and throw that on game six. This motherfucker. Sixers come out the box, Jack.
Fuck.
2-0, sweeping this motherfucker. I'm over there about to suck Jimmy Bianco's dick and shit because Jimmy Bianco fucking knows scores. This guy's fucking money. Do you know they lost in game six? To this day, I have not talked to Jimmy Bianco because it wasn't just a bet. It was my team.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he ruined it for me. Yeah. Like, he ruined my team.
Since
like,
seventh grade, you haven't said hello?
Fuck that bum. And my mother was furious because I gave some of the info to my mom. She bet all the dough. She bet 10 G's. She was like,
oh, no.
Tell that motherfucker not to lay on the fence with his long hippie hair and shit.
Wait. You gave your mom betting advice in seventh grade?
Oh, yeah, I told her. The psychic told me fucking the Sixers in. And all my mother's
either. You should just tell that story at his birthday party all and then mother, go, so fuck you and your mother.
Fuck you,
and then
Jimmy Bianco. All my mother needed was a push to gamble. Do you understand? I came from a gambling house. Cubans are gambling people. So when I told them, and I remember like six people bet that we were all, they never watched basketball before. I had eight Cubans in my house watching basketball, cheering for these, jumping up and down for fucking people, saying little things.
From like a 13-year-old.
Your friend's a fucking bum. He's going to lose.
Get him over here. Six
Pendejo.
Stranger who don't even know how the game went.
You fucking bet the game. You believed him. I was fucking furious. I never got over Jimmy Bianco and shit. To this day, I wouldn't even fucking the Sixers in six. I was so fucking excited. I ripped that fucking Sixer jersey, too.
It would have been nice to make five prop bets to bet the Cubs to win over the last, say, 4 years, a grand every year, because it had to be 15, 16 to one. Lose $4,000, come in at 15, 20,000. That's the bet that I regret not making, you know, because I saw you all the time on the flight in Vegas. I go for every UFC fight that's there and just take a prop bet. Like, 2 years from now, what are the odds? You know, ask the bookmaker, what are the odds that the Cubs are going to go to the World Series next year? Just bet 3 years out straight, G each year. You're going to get paid. Doesn't every fucking gambler say that?
What if you get hit by a fucking car the third year? You ain't getting dicked, all right? And your wife forgot about putting the bet in. She didn't even know you put the bet in.
No one knows where the fucking
slip
is. So
the odds went out the fucking window. I'm really happy for the city of Chicago. They, you know, Bob Lalinka's, his dad, they're all Chicago Cub fans. It's crazy.
I think they're White Sox fans.
I think they're White Sox fans. You got to be careful with Chicago people. Because if you get some fucking roughnecks from the South Side, they take that White Sox seriously.
Crosstown Classic, man. When
I
the
bet
Cubs
those motherfuckers Sox. Must be pissed.
They were. My brother-in-law is a diehard Sox fan. You couldn't even fucking. We
get
were on a group
on
text.
Yeah,
he started fucking yelling at everybody.
Yeah, the South Side Chicago people. That voodoo didn't work. You know what I'm saying? They cut chicken heads.
I was going to ask.
They
that,
stabbed a goat.
Is that a Malouk area?
That's a Malouk area. They put the Malouk on fucking on Chicago, and they still won. Nah, listen, man. Like I said, for me, the basketball went downhill. You know, football, the Super Bowl is a great thing. I just don't like what they've done to it over the years, and who shows.
Yeah, I don't like football
much. How they take over a city and shit. I don't like that.
Yeah.
But listen, when we did the special in Rosemont, the planes were backed up that day, October 13th. They canceled the flight, plus the planes were delayed. Now, I don't know if you fucking know this. You could get to Chicago. That's the least part of your problems. If somebody ever comes to you and says, you got to go to Chicago, no worries. There's 92 flights a day to Chicago. Every airline will drop you off. Even People's Express, even Spirit will put you in a fucking anti-dump bag and dump you over fucking O'Hara, and you land on a trampoline and shit for fat people. You could always get to Chicago. How busy was that Chicago wing that day? Our friend had a 1 o'clock flight, didn't get into L.A., into Chicago till 10.
What?
Because they were delayed all day. The plane, there was no first-class tickets, no upgrades, no nothing. I asked the owner of the club, one of the owners, or the manager at Rosemont, I said, man, tickets were expensive. And it was a nightmare getting here. She goes, my friend's having the same problem. She goes, the problem is, whenever Chicago goes into the in these playoffs, people fly in just to be here.
Yeah.
When I heard
just
that,
to be in the city.
When I heard that, it was like, it makes sense. I would have fucking fly. I told Lee to stay.
I almost did.
Now you could have been telling your friends you saw the Cubs the year they won the championship. See what I'm saying? You fucked it up again. Another mission. Another mission, you fucked up. Look at your blue shirt on. You have your Chicago Cubs shirt on today.
You gotta have it on. Like, I was, that's all I was thinking about last night. I was like, I have to go see the Red Sox. Like, at some point in my life when they're in the World Series and they could, like, I want to be at a game seven, at a game five, whenever they have a chance to win. But it's fucked up that you said that the Sixers lost. I don't remember. Like, I vaguely remember watching the Red Sox win, but I remember vividly the year before when Tim Wakefield got a homer off of him by Aaron Boone. Like, the year before 03, they were playing the Yankees, and the Yankees won in, like, game seven in New York. Aaron Boone hit a home run off of Tim Wakefield, and I just remember I was sitting on the floor of my mother's bedroom and just, like, that walk back to my bedroom. That's something fucked up about me. I remember the Patriots losing to the Giants with the stupid helmet catch. I don't really remember the good stuff. I just remember being happy and excited. All of the losses I remember, like, vividly.
Yeah?
It's fucking weird. that helmet catch was terrible.
You're a fucking wackadoo, this guy. You see what I'm dealing with?
You don't remember? Like, obviously you do.
Fuck yeah. I remember every... I still remember sitting there watching the Mets play Baltimore Orioles when they beat them in the World Series. I think it was Baltimore. I still remember coming home. I still remember Pittsburgh Pirates in the World Series with Candelaria and Willie Stargell.
Yeah.
We Are Family. They're doing blow and shooting steroids and shit.
Who's the guy that took the acid?
Oh, yeah. Doc Willis.
Doc Willis, yeah.
Just, you remember all that stuff from baseball. You know, and like I said, it's a shame that I don't have, like, a blanket with a team on it. I don't have that no more. Like, I don't have any stock in a team, you know. If I like a team, I'll watch it, but I'm the type of guy that's too embarrassed to go get a hat because then people go, ah. And it's true. You're a fucking, you just jump on the bandwagon and shit. Brother, congratulations on bringing the podcast back.
Thank you.
I'm happy you came in today and visited us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, no, we wanted to fucking talk to you. I wanted somebody from Chicago in here today just to talk about whether they won or lost. Just to talk about the reaction and see what it was like. I know I called you right away. I've been thinking about everybody from Chicago the last week and going, I wonder what the fuck they're thinking. You know, it's, I can't imagine that city today. I can't imagine what that city's going to be like this weekend because it's not going to stop.
No, are you going to fly back for the parade? You should. I mean, I don't know what if you can
afford. No, you ain't gonna.
Oh, the parade's important.
Killers don't go to parade.
Yes, you do.
No, they don't. That's for half of fags like you to go to parade, eat popcorn and a fucking hot dog with ketchup on it or some shit.
Ketchup. You don't put ketchup.
Yes, he does.
No, I know I don't.
Yes, he does.
I put mustard. I always spill it on my shirt, and so I can't put anything on it. So, but no, not every year, but after 108 years, can you imagine? There's going to be a million people.
Oh, a million pickpockets. Yeah.
Fuck it. And don't bring your wallet. You don't need your wallet.
People fucking robbing you and shit. Mind your business.
You're going to be hugging people. No.
Watching on TV. Smoke a joint. Go to Chicago for parade. What is he? A fucking half a fruitcake?
Absolutely he is. He should.
The fuck, he's going to float dancing and shit with a bikini on. What the fuck's the matter with you? That's what people who really believe the hype. Don't go. We don't go to parades, all right? Church people don't go to parades. Number one, I want to talk to you people about something important. I'm going to tell you what's important right now in your life for the holidays, a fucking bidet. You know why? Because bidets are back. You're like, Joey, you've been here talking about bidets. What the fuck are you talking about? They're devices that spray your muffler clean with water. You understand me? I grew up with a bidet in my house. Tremendous. Now, thanks to Tushy Sleek Bidet that clips onto your existing toilet. That's right. It clips onto your existing toilet and sprays your butt completely solid clean with fresh water to get your muffler clean so you're not sitting on bacteria causing hemorrhoids, yeast infections, and just plain old rotten ass. You understand me? You've had rotten ass, and you sit queer, and it blows out of the back of your belt ain't on tight. Also, the whole room smells like rotten ass. Trust me, it's happened to me not since I've had the Hello Tushy fucking bidets. And bidets are better for the environment. No paper, more trees. Capiche? And it only takes a pint of water to wash your little muffler, okay? Tushy stands behind their product. This ain't no fucking okey-doke product. If it can handle Uncle Joey's asshole and my fucking weight, it can handle your skinny little muffler, right? And they've got a 60-day guarantee. Plus, they got towels coming out that you put right next to you and you wipe your little muffler. Spotless. And let me tell you something. It don't stop there with your muffler. Why be a pig? If you're a woman, dip that monkey in that fucking water. Revitalize that motherfucker. If you're a man, listen. When I tushy my muffler, I just don't tushy my muffler. I wipe the sides. I clean out the nuts behind that. That's where the mildew develops. And I pull the skin back on the turtleneck to get my helmet washed and clean. Why walk around with a clean ass and a stinky dick or vice versa? You understand me? Go to HelloTushy.com right now. I'm going to give you 10% off on this stocking stuffer, okay? Because number one, anybody can give you a fucking tie or a wristwatch or a knife. You give somebody a fucking portable bidet in their stocking and see what happens. Who's the most popular fucking man at that party from now on? But don't believe me. Go to HelloTushy. Hello with a capital H, Tushy.com right now /church. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you 10% off your order, okay? Tushy's going to take good care of you. They got a 60-day money-back guarantee, and they're a great company. They're great to deal with. And I'm telling you this firsthand. This is the Christmas gift you want to send to your fucking friend. You know that fat fucking uncle you got that always farts at Thanksgiving? He needs his ass washed. You know your grandmother? She's really sweet, but you can tell she hasn't washed that pussy in 8 months. She needs that fucking Hello Tushy. You know that little kid that sits next to you? You know he's got rotten ass. He hasn't wiped his ass since day one. Give him Hello Tushy. Go to HelloTushy.com right now /church. Get 10% off. Now, you want healthy shits? I mean, why wash your ass with Hello Tushy if you're not taking healthy shits? That's why you got to go to Onnit.com right now. They got a great selection of supplements from the hemp chocolate protein to the vanilla acai. These motherfuckers will take care of you. Aubrey searches the globe looking for quality ingredients that will benefit you to the fucking 100% max. Whether it's the Alpha brand when you got 100% guarantee money back on, or whether it's the New Mood or the Hemp Force protein or the Shroom Tech. Listen, I live on Shroom Tech when I fly immune. I get sick from time to time, but it don't go over the border. But don't believe me. Go to Onnit.com right now. Look at the great selection of supplements they got. You want something? Give it a try. Start with the hemp protein, chocolate, cacao. It's going to blow your mind. Go to Onnit.com and press
church.
Boom. CHURCH. And get 10% off your first order delivered to your fucking casa. Let me talk to you people about something from the heart. Let me get the CISO page there. Let me talk to you cocksuckers from the heart right now. It's November 2nd. It's November 3rd, 2nd. Who the fuck knows, all right? He's dropping bottles, this fucking mook over here. CISO is a new affiliate of NBC, okay? I could blow smoke up your ass and give you speeches or whatnot. CISO is a new affiliate of NBC. They're going to be carrying fucking... It's going to be the comedy fucking channel to be a part of. I'm very fortunate that they're going to accept my special and start airing it December 8th. What I'm going to do for you is, here's what Uncle Joey's doing for you. Grab a fucking pen right now, all right? What I'm going to do for you is, the best thing is it's $3.99 a month, okay? And that's all great and dandy, but what I'm going to do for you right now is I'm going to give all my listeners a free 2 month when you use promo code Joey. Again, promo code Joey at checkout. I'm going to give you 2 free months, which will carry you over to January fucking 2nd. You know what that's going to do? You can watch specials. You can watch Saturday Night Lives. You can watch the original programming. But you can watch Uncle Joey's special over, 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 and over again. That's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to give it to you for free. I'm not going to charge you $5 like everybody else. I'm not going to... Nothing. It's coming out on CISO. You can put it on your fucking Roku, and you're going to live like a doctor. So do me a favor right now, as personal as friends. I know you're sitting in your fucking cubicle. Grab a pen right now. Grab it. You're going to go to CISO.com right now, and you're going to sign up 2 months for free with the promo code Joey, okay? You're going to watch other shows like Hidden in America with Jonah Ray and Harmon Quest and Take My Wife. They're all great shows, but you're going to do me a fucking solid. I don't want a dime out of you. $3.99 a month for 2 fucking months. You're not going to pay by using promo code Joey, all right? And that's it, and that's that, cocksuckers. I love you guys. Don't forget, Wilbur Theater, there's 11 tickets left. I don't know how... You have to sit next to somebody with rotten ass. You don't have a bidet. And then Saturday night, I'm at the Foxwoods Casino. Listen, it's UFC 205. This is between us. They're going to play it at the fucking casino. We're going to run out of there, go to a bar with Lee. We're going to get stoned, and we're going to fucking do a play-by-play on Periscope. I will see you motherfuckers at the Foxwoods Casino. Houston, Texas, you've been asking. I'm giving it to you now. I'm part of the In-N-Out Come and Take It Comedy Festival November 18th, 19th, and 20th. It's $35 for the day pass, okay? You go down there, you pay for the fucking pass. You get to see my show. You get to see Todd Barry. You get to see everybody else on that fucking stage. $35 fucking bucks, all right? It's a festival. You're going to go to Houston. You're going to eat. Ookie Spooky will be there. Crystal and Jordan will be there. It's going to be a Leo will be there with fucking Rosa. What's her name?
Paula.
Paula, Rosa. Who the fuck knows anymore? You got like 20 bitches. Anyway, I love you cocksuckers. Mick. We're going to be looking forward to your podcast. Shoot over a tweet so I can retweet it for you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Get you back on board. I love you, cocksuckers. Stay black. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back Sunday night with Felipe and Silent Bob. We're going to do an all-new jamboree Sunday night. I love you, cocksuckers. Stay black.
This show was brought to you by HelloTushy.com. Bidets are back. HelloTushy.com makes portable bidets that spray your butt clean with water. Go to HelloTushy.com right now and use code word CHURCH or go to HelloTushy.com/CHURCH to get 10% off of your order. That's HelloTushy.com/CHURCH. Show is also brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to save 10% on all of their amazing optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, ShroomTech Immune, and ShroomTech Sport. And again, go to CESO.com. That's CESO.com, S-E-E-S-O. And get 2 months for free when you use promo code Joey at checkout. And don't forget to check out Joey's new special on CISO on December 8th. CISO.com, code word Joey.
Straight line, so never get surprised. I don't ask for favors, so don't get abused. I learned to win when I was young, so never ever gonna lose. The baby of the money and the two of the child, I got a contract on you. I got a contract on you. No questions. I never speak my mind. I always found that silence helps to keep me and my kind alive. I take care of business. It takes care of me. I look after myself and do a girl, cause somebody's always looking for me. I'm paying you the money and I do the job. I got a contract on you. I got a contract. What manner of man am I? I gotta learn something, then I move on. What manner of man are you? Never stands back to Jim McHugh. I do what I do, cause I can't do nothing better. You do what you do, just to thank yourself. You got nothing better to do. Population down, if you know what I mean. I never stop in one place. I'm all about the cities.